Black Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Kay Potok, together with my co-host, Varad Dawati. Hello, Varad.
Hello.
And hello to you, the listener.
Hello, Kay, and hello to you, the listener. We have got two different segments about bikes today. One about the First Ames Main Street Bike Night, which happened last Friday. And the other one about a proposed new bike trail for cyclists, which will be discussed at the Ames City Council meeting this coming Tuesday.
Yes, and it's two different kinds of bikes we're talking about, of course. Motorbike riders gathered here on Friday, and the other kind of bikes, the ones that burn only cholesterol and human calories, will be discussed at the City Council meeting tomorrow. Dan de Geest from the Ames Bicycle Coalition is here in the studio and will be telling us about that. And Varad, I believe we'll also be hearing a report you've prepared on Amnesty International.
Yes, there is a local chapter for Amnesty International, and I had a chance to learn more about them this past week. And we'll also be hearing from Ron Edwards, the supervisor at the Ames Animal Shelter, about the future plans for the shelter. So, we have got a full program today.
Yes, we have. And now let's hear from some sounds from the Friday's Main Street Bike Night, which took place, a lot of it, just right outside our studio here. This is a recording made by our station manager, Ursula Rudenberg, and also by Alan Gilderhaus, known as Gildy, the host of Rock of the Ages.
This was a first for downtown Ames. Last Friday, the Ames Main Street Bike Night happened, an event for people who ride motorcycles and for people who just love motorcycles and want to come and look at them. As well as listen to them. Douglas Avenue is blocked off between Main Street and Fifth Street for a barbecue and a beer garden, and a country southern rock cover band, the J. Clyde Band from Manson, Iowa. They kept the party going. On Douglas Avenue, in front of the band, folks were dancing. The party was right outside of KHOI Studios. It looked like folks out there were having a great time. Gildy, that's Alan Gilderhaus, KHOI's Rock of Ages DJ, and I were in the station, so how could we not get involved? We walked over to Main Street. The north side of Main Street was reserved for a motorcycle only from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m., but as far as we could see, both sides of Main Street lined with a packed row of motorcycles that were gleaming in the twilight sun. Motorcycles obviously make a lot of people happy. This is not news to anybody, but we wanted to take this opportunity to actually learn from the bikers themselves why biking makes them so happy. So Gildy and I went into the crowd and began recruiting interviewees. Most of these people really did not come to this party to be on the radio. But Gildy and I were insistent, and a few of them were willing to step away from the fun for just a few minutes to tell us a little bit about what biking means to them. This is what some of them had to say.
I'm Bobby Rochone.
Michael Devan.
Tell us about what drew you to motorcycle.
Two wheels and speed.
It's all about two wheels. It's the experience of the motor between your leg. It's a way to be free. It's kind of like being an eagle. You know, it's the American dream to be able to soar and cruise around on back roads and check out the beauty of America. I never know where I'm going to go when I ride. I just get on, go a direction. I see a road, and it's like, I've never been on this road. Let's see where this road goes.
Did you explore?
Oh, yeah. You know, that's the American dream, to explore and see new things, you know. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. It's a remarkable thing to feel the air and the pressure. Mm-hmm. Whatever speed you're going, you know, the faster you go, of course, you feel a few more G's. I like to ride my bike to the limit, because that's what excites me. There's other people that just like to cruise. I like to cruise once in a while. It helps you think.
Just you and the wind going.
Yeah, right on.
You go out there, it's just you and the bike between your legs, and it's, you know, the power of the motor and the views you get. You get more views out of it than the car.
Because you're out in the open.
Yeah.
It's the freedom to be who you are in your spirit. Mm-hmm. It's a way for you to get a release. You don't have to worry about the stresses of work, family life, because it's a passion. You get to soar, especially with Harley-Davidsons.
Why do you enjoy biker parties?
It's nice to mingle with other people that come from different communities, the surrounding communities around Ames. We have something in common. You have a motorcycle. I have a lot of friends that work out at the Harley shop here in Ames, out at Zylstra, and they're fantastic people, very knowledgeable in anything that you need to know about your bike. Some people wait years and years and years to own their first Harley-Davidson, and when they get that first bike, the thrill, it's a lot like having a child. The first time you're a parent, you know, you're excited. You get to watch this thing grow up, and you get to nurture it and love it as it grows. Riding motorcycles, regardless of what brand it is, that feeling is mutual. It really doesn't matter if it's a Harley-Davidson, a Kawasaki, a Honda, a Suzuki. Everybody that has a motorcycle, they're very blessed people because they have that ability to just jump on and ride them.
Any last words?
If you don't got a bike, get one.
Right on.
Thank you.
Right
on. Thank you so much.
Or go
for
get on
time.
One that somebody has.
You're welcome.
Mike Fry.
Melissa Fry.
No, we came from Marshalltown for the Main Street Bike Night.
Do you ride a bike?
Oh, yeah.
We do. I ride Harley Davidson, 1200 Sportster XL Low.
Why Harley?
The comfort, especially my bike. Hers not so much. The look. When you jump on a Harley, you've got a sound that no other bike can match. Nothing sounds like them, that's for sure.
I bought mine because I had just started a couple years ago. So just starting out, that was a nice, smaller bike for me to learn on. I'm ready to go up, though.
And a bigger bike is?
A lot more comfortable.
What do you like best about riding a bike?
Freedom.
I'd have to say the same. I feel just, there's no cage. You're just almost one with nature.
You're here with your mother?
I am.
She's been riding for a long time?
She has. She used to have a chopper of some sort, so she had a really nice bike back in the day.
Something you really share in common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. She's just, I don't know, one of a kind, I guess I should say. Yeah. Yeah. She's young at heart, and I'm more the mother than she is.
Did you ride your bikes to Ames from Marshalltown?
We did.
But how long does that take?
Probably about 40 minutes.
We took the old 30, yeah.
It's a nice ride?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Very beautiful.
Yeah. What do you like the best about coming to an event like this?
You meet new people every time. Cool people. We've got several that we're with right now, probably 15.
We didn't really know many of them. Just one person was like, hey, we're going to meet here if you want to ride with us. You know, when we're out there, we have our own kind of language, like them farmers that if you're out in the country and they wave to you.
Yeah, you get lots of comments about your bike.
Yeah, you know, every bike, you know. It's two fingers down, and it's just...
It's two fingers down?
To the side. It's just how we wave.
It's a wave.
It's just the biker's wave,
Would you introduce our listeners a little bit to biker culture?
It's a lot of, I don't know if you want to call it companionship or friendship, a lot of hanging out.
They do different charities, all kinds of different events and poker runs, and they just ride to five or six different towns, and you pay an entry fee, and then part of that entry fee gets donated to charity, or somebody may be raising money for a cancer family member.
You get together, you go for a ride like the poker run she's talking about. You've got a destination, you've got a starting place, and you've got several spots in between, and you stop and you draw a hand of poker. You get a card at each spot. At the end of the ride, whoever has the best hand wins.
Whatever money they've raised, you get... Mm-hmm. Half of that.
So that requires coordination between a lot of different venues.
Yes,
it does.
Is there some sort of organizing body that does this?
Just a group of people that get together and decide that they want to do a fundraiser.
There was an Animal Rescue League.
Yeah, the Animal Rescue League, and then there was another one for breast cancer that we rode.
Do they pick out their own venues, or is there kind of a circuit?
In our area, there's several bars that'll do it almost every time. Yeah, most of the time you'll make a big circle.
Is this national?
Oh, it's all over, for sure.
the event that's happening tonight, is that part of a poker game or anything like that?
No, this is just a gathering.
And are there a lot of those, too?
Yes, yes.
How has Ames treated you?
Been great so far. It's a good atmosphere. There's a lot of people, a lot to see.
Good food. Mm-hmm.
Would you come back to Ames?
For sure.
Definitely.
Well, I don't want to keep you too long from the party. Thank you so much.
Just a personal note, as much as I love Harleys, an old friend of mine back in high school had a Honda Goldwing, which was one of the most beautiful bikes I've ever seen in my life.
Touche, touche.
We are talking about Ames Main Street Bike Night, which happened last Friday night. That was Mike Fry and Melissa Fry. They're a couple who live in Marshalltown, and they rode their bikes over for the festivities that were happening in downtown Ames. The event was hosted by the Main Street Cultural District, but Ames Main Street Bike Night was really the brainchild of Ames resident Joshua Deshane. Joshua is a downtown businessman as well as a biker. He is the artistic director of a family-owned business, the Salon Beauty Parlor on Main Street. I asked Joshua why he volunteered to make this event happen.
If you look at Facebook pages now, websites, if you Google like Iowa Bike Nights, you can pretty much find something every night of the week if you wanted to. So the concept is to get people from other towns to come to Ames and for sure check out Main Street just to support the economy and just see all the wonderful things here we have to offer.
What do you ride?
I'm fortunate enough to ride a 2014 Street Glide, which is a touring edition of Harley Davidson.
And why do you ride that bike?
For me, it was just the comfort. You can go further on it. It's just an amazing motorcycle.
So you like to tour?
I love to tour. We're normally somewhere every other weekend, whether it's Sioux City, up northern Minnesota. We do Milwaukee, and we're actually going to do Sturgis this year, a bike rally in South Dakota, and actually it's its 75th anniversary.
A lot of people go?
They say, I've heard it's within the week they hit about 1 million people. I'm excited about the event, but I'm just excited to get up there and do some, just see the scenery.
So Main Street Bike Night is really part of your love of touring. It's about touring to Ames.
Yeah, you know, it's something like that you can do on a Friday night.
Describe a little bit the culture of touring.
You know, I would love to ride my bike to California and have 2 weeks to get there and do it that route. But what tends to happen is, you know, with time restraints and everything and everyone's so busy now, we don't have time. We may have a weekend and we may have one night. So what you're seeing across Iowa for sure, if not the United States, is you're seeing local communities host bike nights. So this was my dream about 3 years ago, and I didn't understand how there's so many motorcyclists. A local Harley Davidson shop among some other motorcycle shops. I've been in Ames 10 years. I've been fortunate enough to work on Main Street for the last 7 years. Me and my family own a hair salon on Main Street. I have tons of passion for Main Street. It was cool to take one of my hobbies, but on that note, support the local economy, I guess, or support the businesses. I'm all about it. If we can bring 5,000 people once a month to Main Street Ames, I'm all for it.
Zylstra Harley Davidson of Ames was a major sponsor of this event. They had a booth on Douglas Avenue where employees of Zylstra were showing off some custom bikes and engaging in a lot of shop talk. General Manager Matt Miracle stepped away from his work in the booth and was able to speak with us for just a few minutes.
My name is Matt Miracle. I am the general manager at Zylstra Harley Davidson on 13th Street, right out by Interstate 35. And this is our first ever Ames Main Street Bike Night. It sort of all came together over the last 4 months.
You're sponsors tonight, right?
Yep. We sponsor a lot of events. We go to a lot of bike nights as a dealership, not to sell, but to give back to the community and get out there in front of people and let them know about Zylstra Harley Davidson and try and build our business. It's one of the perks of the job.
How's it been going so far?
Good. Great. Yeah. Mellow crowd, a lot of fun, a lot of laughing, just good people.
How many people do you think are out there?
We ran out of wristbands, so that was 500. We've seen a lot of people from Story County, Marshall County, Boone, Fort Dodge, Newton, just everywhere. So mm-hmm. Word really spread. I think this has the potential to be a sizable event.
And you have a booth out here?
We do.
Tell us about some of the conversations you have with people at the booth.
I think for the most part, people are thrilled to have it here in town. There are a lot of bike nights in other communities, and it's hard to get off work at 5 or 6 o'clock and ride 70 or 80 miles to a bike night. So having one here local gives everyone the opportunity to maybe not put on so many miles, but actually get to spend some time listening to the band and hanging out.
Are you thinking of doing this more often?
Yeah, I think if the city is comfortable with the way the event went tonight and the Main Street Cultural District folks who I've talked to tonight and they're thrilled, feel like there's a big influx of business to help them infuse their small businesses, then we're going to ask to do it again.
You work for Zylstra and you represent Zylstra, but what do you yourself ride out there?
I ride a 2015 Black Denim Street Glide Special.
Oh, good heavens. I can't believe I actually know what that is, but I do, and it is a gorgeous bike.
Yeah, I love it.
Attendance of Ames Main Street Bike Night last Friday exceeded all expectations. But by 11 o'clock p.m., Douglas Avenue and Main Street were remarkably quiet and spotless, with not a motorcycle in sight. To get an assessment of how things turned out, I stopped by the salon on Saturday morning to speak with Joshua Deshane, who is this event's chief instigator and coordinator. Stepping away from doing a hair dyeing job, Joshua gave his assessment of the first Ames Main Street Bike Night.
The cultural district, we're expecting 200 people. Harley, one of our big sponsors, was expecting 300. I said 400, and we had 1,000 people show up. This was kind of a test run for us. We were trying to keep it smaller, but all the support made it a huge successful event, so I was very happy with it. There was bikes everywhere. Church parking lots were full. It was crazy. I remember walking out of actually where the band was and walked out on Main Street, and it was just bike after bike after bike, and I went and stood in the middle of Main Street, and I was like, this is really cool, you know, a dream come true.
What's next?
We're going to talk about doing something hopefully in the late fall, bringing in another awesome band, getting a lot of other great supporters now at this point, a few other food options, so maybe growing it a little bit. We have a beautiful Main Street. Ames is very well known. It's a great community. Main Street Culture District is known for throwing great events. Zylstra Harley-Davidson is good for throwing great events. Good people involved. And then the big picture, I think, this winter we're going to work through getting a regular schedule. There's just a calling for it.
This is Ursula Rudenberg reporting for KHOI on the first Ames Main Street Bike Night with the help of Ellen Gildahaus.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we've just been hearing about a gathering of motorbikes and their riders here in Ames. I wasn't at Bike Night on Friday, but I did see most of the bikers out on their bikes yesterday, apparently heading out of town. At about 1:30 on Sunday afternoon, police stopped traffic at the junction of South Dakota and Morrison Drive to let a stream of bikers ride by. My husband and I were heading home, and we had a good view of the stream of motorcycles as they went past. It took about 9 minutes for them all to pass, and most of them waved at the stopped traffic as they went by. Actually, a lot of them were three-wheelers, so there was motor tricycles, I guess. I don't know if they actually call them that.
We'll be getting back to the other kind of bikes and bike trails a bit later in the program. But for now, let's have a change of pace and welcome our guest, Ron Edwards, director of the Ames Animal Shelter. Welcome to Local Talk, Ron.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, Ron, I believe you had a recent grant for the shelter, which sort of prompted us to ask you to come and tell us about your future plans for the shelter and maybe a little bit of how you plan to spend the money and so on.
Sure. Thank you. You know, we're very fortunate. GreaterGood.org and Boehringer Ingelheim donated to the shelter. It was a vaccination grant that we received. And this is the second time for GreaterGood.org. And they helped the shelter last year with a very nice, very generous grant. It was $5,000 in shelter renovations, which we used to enhance our dog play yards, as well as $5,000 in dog food from Pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very nice grant. We're very fortunate to receive that, and anything that we can receive at the shelter in the way of donations help us to focus more of the money that we have, the resources that we have, towards helping the animals that we care for.
So do you see any big changes because of this grant?
You know, it's extremely important that animals are vaccinated when they come into the shelter. They're away from their home. They're away from their people when animals come in. And it's very stressful for them. So mm-hmm. It's extremely important that animals are vaccinated right away. We're very fortunate that we have a responsible community here in Ames. And most people do have vaccinations for their pets. So when they come into the shelter, we want to make sure that we're looking at them, isolating animals when we can. If they have any signs of illness, whether it's a upper respiratory infection, a cold, or something of that nature. But it's really important that we're staying on top of it. And the grant for the vaccinations just help us to do that and help us, again, reallocate those resources to other things that we can do to help animals we care for.
And I believe there's been a sort of outbreak in upper respiratory disease.
Correct.
Was this for cats, dogs, or both?
It could be for both. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, right now we do have what we call a kitty cold going on at the shelter. So we do have some cats isolated. Most are responding well. A lot of times it's a viral infection, so the antibiotics are really not doing anything for it at all. So we just monitor their food intake, make sure that they're still thriving, they're still active. But we just have to keep an eye on our animal population and make sure that it doesn't spread. And in animal shelter, unfortunately, that's very easy to happen. Mm-hmm. People love to go in there and pet all of them. And of course, you're just spreading one to another when you're petting of them. So we really encourage people to, of course, wash their hands, use antibacterial soap, things that will help the animals stay healthy at the shelter.
Now, maybe some of our listeners don't know about the different kind of shelters and that we're very proud of our Ames shelter, and I'm sure you are too, because it is, as they say, a no-kill shelter.
Sure. So, you know, kind of along the same lines of animals that come in that have disease or maybe they have the kitty cold or something. Unfortunately, there's a lot of shelters across the United States that when an animal has an upper respiratory infection, it is highly contagious to other cats. They may have to euthanize those animals. That is absolutely not what we do at the Ames Animal Shelter. We're going to treat those animals, make them healthy, and then find them hopefully their forever homes. So there's a very big difference. We never euthanize animals for time, for space, or for minor health conditions like that. So that's something that this community and I am very proud of mm-hmm. In how we care for the community's animals and do our best and do everything that we possibly can to find them forever homes.
This, if you never, for any reason of space or anything, get rid of any animals, surely, I mean, do you have to keep expanding or is the problem of lost animals or abandoned animals getting smaller?
You know, I think, again, we have a very responsible community. Oftentimes with dogs that get lost, we have the owners picking them up the very same day and usually within an hour or so mm-hmm. of a pet getting out. Unfortunately, cats are not quite the same way. Sometimes it takes a few days for owners to pick them up. So, again, a very responsible community. There is space limitations that we have. What we would do in a situation if we had limited space, we would work with volunteers and others to foster these animals and send them into private homes rather than keep them at the shelter. We haven't really been in that situation yet. We do have a mom that has four kittens that's in a foster home, and it's just really better for the mom and the kittens to thrive in a foster home rather than being in the animal shelter. It's less stressful, helps the kittens grow, stay healthy, keeps them away from the others. So that way we know they're safe. So right now they're not being exposed to that kitty cold uh-huh. that we have going on.
I didn't know that you had foster
yep.
homes for your pets.
We do. We have foster moms, and it's, you know, I guess there could be foster dads. It's typically a foster mom that comes in. And
is it just cats or dogs, too, that they foster?
It could be dogs, too. Uh-huh. We don't necessarily have the need as much. We don't typically see dogs come in the shelter that are pregnant that need to have, you know, their puppies in a home environment rather than in the shelter. It's typically cats, and this is typically the season when we see the kittens and the moms coming in. That's what we refer to as kitten season.
Do you need more foster moms for, I mean, can we put a plug for that?
You know, we don't. We always keep information on hand. So if they come in right now, we don't currently have that need. But, you know, we would always consider that in the future. And that's a big part of our volunteer program, being able to reach out and have those homes available should the need arise.
And have you got any pets available for adoption at the moment?
We do, actually. Mostly cats. And again, because the cats have the kitty cold right now, there's always a caveat that we want to make sure that if they have another cat at home, that probably better to wait right now until they get through this cold because it is highly contagious to other cats. Our last dog was actually adopted Saturday, so we don't have any dogs waiting right now for adoption. We do have two strays that came in that were waiting for the owners to reclaim, but no dogs for adoption right now. And we actually had a bunny adopted on Saturday, so just right now, just some cats.
Where did that bunny come
from? This particular bunny was actually surrendered by the owner. Okay. So if owners can no longer care for their pets, we want them, of course, to surrender them to us. This is for Ames residents, rather than, abandoning them, leaving them out in the wild. A domestic bunny is not the same as a wild bunny. You can't turn them loose.
Right.
So this particular bunny, his name was Thumper, was surrendered to us and adopted within a few days. So that's great news for that bunny.
Okay. Yeah, and just to remind people, we've mentioned this before when you've been on our show, Ron, but most of the animals that you have been surrendered. They're not being abandoned.
Yeah, we do have most of them that are available for adoption have been surrendered. And, of course, there's various reasons, moving, unable to have pets, things like that. So it's, of course, always important to find out if you can have pets where you're living, especially a lot of the students here want to make sure that the housing that they live in allows pets.
Sure.
And make sure that it's a lifetime commitment as well. So it's not just a pet that you have while you're here at the university. You want to make sure that you have arrangements to take that pet with you wherever you're going back
right.
to, wherever you
right.
want to call home.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but when I was an undergraduate, I and my roommates had a cat, but we knew in advance that my mother was going to take this cat when we finished school.
That's a great plan to have.
Yeah. I think that happens to a lot of students' pets. Mom or dad ends up, or both ends up caring
yes.
for them. Well, is there anything else you'd like to remind our listeners of before you go, Ron?
Well, one thing that we have that's changed since the last time I was on the show is that we now have a database, and our website is updated every hour. Cool. So if you're interested in looking at animals that we have at the shelter, we have a picture of them, and again, every hour. So if we get an animal in at the shelter, you've lost a pet, you can just log on to our website through the City of Ames and see pictures of the pets that are there. And we have a little bit of information as well, too. So if you're interested in adopting a pet, there's a little bit of information about what we have there.
Okay, well, that'll be useful for everybody, I'm sure. Well, thank you very much, Ron Edwards, for coming in and telling us about the latest. People always love to hear about animals, I think. I know I do. Thank you again.
Absolutely. Thank you.
This is KHOI Community Radio, Local Talk. We've just been talking to Ron Edwards, the director of the Ames Animal Shelter. But Virad, I believe you've been doing some research on Amnesty International.
Yes, I went to the Group 40 meeting on June 13, and I had a chance to learn more about Amnesty International, the organization, the history, their goals, and their activities. So let's hear some more. During a Saturday every month, a group of Ames residents, part of Amnesty International Group 40, get together to discuss human rights and write letters on behalf of those deprived of these rights.
Wow, a map of Sudan. That is very
And that got you in trouble?
Yeah, that's a terrible thing to do,
isn't
it?
Isn't that something? Does it say what human rights group? It says a human rights group. It doesn't say who. I mean, isn't that something?
Discussions at the meetings focus on new cases as well as progress on the old ones.
Yesterday, the trial of two Christian pastors facing a possible death sentence in Sudan for their faith began. Pastors, and their two names you mentioned, are on trial on a number of trumped up, in parentheses, national security charges and for offending Islamic beliefs, in quotation marks, because of their Christian faith. Their supposed crimes could lead to the death penalty.
Ames resident Mary Sand has been the Amnesty local chapter co-leader since 1985.
We have a very small, tight group that has been together for decades. Amnesty International has been in existence since 1961, based in London, and our group was formed in 1976. Most of the folks that were with us in 1985 are still with us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the past, volunteers have joined the chapter for a number of different reasons.
I was already a member of Amnesty International USA, just sending in my money to be a member because I believed in the movement. And then I found out there was a chapter here, so I got involved in that. The thing that was very attractive about this one was you actually could work on behalf of a person.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just some topic or some region. You actually got to work on a case of a person. And so you felt responsible for that person. And that's how you feel. Once you get started working on a case, you feel responsible for that person. And you have to, you feel like you have to do everything in your power to help that person. And that's what keeps you in.
Mostly for biblical reasons, my graduate study was in the Old and New Testament and in systematic theology. And there's a verse in Micah in the Old Testament, one of the Old Testament prophets, that says, "What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God?" And as far as I'm concerned, what Amnesty's doing, what their goals are hit two of those, and that is doing justice and loving kindness. That's why I do it.
Welcome back. We are learning about the Ames chapter of Amnesty International, Group 40. Citizens in several countries are vulnerable to human rights abuses by state entities and independent groups. There can be a variety of reasons for persecution or imprisonment.
Mary Sand, co-leader of Amnesty International, Group 40. Usually they disappear because of some political view that they've expressed. That's usually what it is. But sometimes folks are the wrong religion, sometimes the wrong ethnic group. It can be anything, anything that's not crime-related that we're allowed to work on.
During the meetings, participants work on urgent action matters as well as long-term prisoner cases.
With the long-term case, you work on the case until the case is resolved one way or the other, whether the person is released or dies, somehow the case is resolved. And that can take months. We had one case where it probably lasted a couple months. Remember the one in South Korea many years ago?
Yeah.
And then one case, it was an Indonesian case, we worked on that case for 15 years. Our current one now is for 5 years.
Urgent action cases refer to those cases in which an imprisoned person is at risk for torture. Amnesty International sends out alerts so that participants can send out as many letters as possible to their respective governments.
And then we also receive what Amnesty calls urgent actions. And I receive at least 2 urgent actions every month, maybe more. And these are cases in which someone has been detained. There's risk of torture. It's quite an urgent thing, and so they want as many letters worldwide to go out as possible. And so the various groups worldwide receive these urgent action emails, and so our group works on those as well.
Some of these long-term cases can go on for a long time. The latest case involves 2 Pakistani men who have been missing for more than a decade.
This is a case of 2 disappeared men in Pakistan. They were disappeared July 30, 2005. We received the case in 2010. And it's 2015, and the Pakistan government still refuses to tell us what happened and refuses to tell the family what happened. And they are among, you know, hundreds, probably thousands of disappeared folks in Pakistan.
Apart from writing letters, the chapter also contacts embassies regarding cases concerning disappearance, imprisonment, and human rights abuses.
I have actually gone to embassies in D.C. and protested things. In one case, the FBI came and had a little discussion with me because I went into the Czech embassy when Czechoslovakia was still communist. It was before 89. Yeah, we got a Czechoslovakian prisoner out who was unjustly imprisoned, but it was mostly a doctor here in Ames that did that. The rest of us tried to help in different ways, and I hope my visit to the Czech embassy did some good because the FBI certainly wanted to know why I was there.
The June meeting had 2 participants. Kurt Siemers is one of the longtime volunteers.
I began in 1985. Occasionally we have discussions. Most of the time we're focused on action, sending letters to protest things because we're pretty much agreed.
The local chapter meets at the Ames Public Library every month. At Amnesty International Group 40, volunteers write letters to governments regarding prisoners held illegally and regarding those who went missing without any trace. The co-leaders of the local chapter say the biggest change in how they coordinate the local participants has been through the introduction of the internet. News about disappearing people and human rights abuses is now instantly available online.
The internet has really made a difference. It used to be Amnesty International would mail us all the information, would mail us actions, and now we receive a lot of actions by email. And it used to be that we had to pretty much wait for Amnesty International to give us news of any developments in the case, and we find new developments on our current case all the time on our own monthly.
The local chapter meets at the Ames Public Library every month. Those interested in joining can contact Mary Sand.
My email is msand, M-S-A-N-D, at isunet.net.
This is Varad Devte for KHOI Community Radio.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Kay Patak, one of your hosts, together with my co-host, Varad Dewati. Thank you for that segment, Varad.
Thank you. I enjoyed doing it. But now, I'd like to introduce our last guest, Dan DeGeest of the Ames Bicycle Coalition. Welcome to Local Talk, Dan, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, Dan, why don't you tell us about the goals of Ames Bicycle Coalition for people that don't have maybe heard of you?
Sure, thank you. Ames Bike Coalition is a group of local volunteers. We're all cyclists. We all are people who have chosen to use the bicycle primarily as our main mode of transportation, also just for recreation and just for fun. We've gotten together and over the last couple of years and just decided to try to do what we can do as a group to improve things for all the other cyclists in Ames and make things better for everybody with more trails and more bicycle support from our transportation infrastructure, and just try to get more people out bicycling and enjoying the benefits of a bicycling lifestyle, having fun, getting healthy, you know, saving a little carbon emissions, and as you said earlier, burning a little cholesterol.
Right, right. And if we have more bike trails around town, I guess it will beautify Ames too.
It would beautify it, but it would also make it a lot safer for the people that are out there on bikes. So a big goal of ours is a safety goal. And Ames has some wonderful places to bicycle right now, and it also has some very difficult and not so great places to bike. And so our goal is to really get those all connected so that it's really possible to bike from one side of the town to the other in a safe way and get to where you want to go. That's a big goal for us.
As of now, what are some really good places to bike in Ames and around surrounding areas?
There's actually a couple different kinds of bicycling that people do in Ames. And so there's places like Ada Hayden, for example, which is a wonderful recreational destination. It's a great place to go and rollerblade or walk your dog or ride your bicycle in a very safe and beautiful environment. The kinds of cycling that we're a little bit more concerned with right now is more of a transportation type of bicycling, where you want to get from your house to your job or you want to go from your house to the grocery store. And there are some places in town where there is some nice infrastructure. For example, Kay, we were talking earlier about near where you live on Ash Avenue, there's a section of a two-lane, 10-foot-wide buffered cycle track where you're physically separated from traffic. It's a very safe type of infrastructure. Unfortunately, it's very short and doesn't really go anywhere.
So it starts in the middle of nowhere and ends in the middle of nowhere.
Exactly. There's also streets like Highland, which have on-street bike lanes. 6th Street, which, for example, I rode this morning to get here to the studio. So for part of my trip, you know, I feel very safe on an on-street bike lane. But then, again, those things end, and you get into situations where there is no trail, there is no bike lanes. It's not clear what you should do or where you should go, and that's when the safety really starts to break down.
And there's an important meeting that you're very concerned about coming up tomorrow at Ames City Council.
Correct.
And why didn't you tell us about that?
It's a really good opportunity, which is why we're so interested in it. First of all, I should say that this particular topic has been pushed back to the July 14th City Council meeting.
It's not tomorrow.
It is not tomorrow. However, the Ames Bicycle Coalition will still be there tomorrow to give a short presentation on our idea.
So you'll be presenting the idea.
But the actual discussion on the land settlement will occur on July 14th, and we just found that out very late on Friday. The topic is the old middle school property along State Street, which was part of a controversial land acquisition that's been going on over the last couple of years by Breckenridge Development Corporation. They had intended to get the properties rezoned and build rather high-density student-based housing for Iowa State University.
Yeah, this is just in case people, you know, they're as vague about as I often am about this. This is the old middle school property. And I
think
Breckenridge actually demolished, they were responsible for demolishing the old
Breckenridge
middle school.
Breckenridge purchased the properties from the Ames School District. And with the intention of doing this large-scale student development, they did pay to have the old middle school taken down. And they had designed a development there, but it required a rezoning from the city of Ames, which they were unable to get.
And I should add, they sued or attempted to sue the city.
Correct.
About that.
Correct. Correct. So,
in other words, there's a lot of controversy and bad feeling around this whole
thing. For sure. And there was a neighborhood group of people that banded together from that neighborhood who really wanted to keep the integrity of their sort of single family, more residential kind of neighborhood. And they were instrumental in sort of how this has played out. So the meeting that is coming up is to discuss a settlement of that whole operation there with the intent of ISU and the Ames, City of Ames, buying back a large majority of the property and allowing Breckenridge to continue to develop one particular part of the property. But it's really to discuss settlement terms. So where the whole bike angle comes in is about a year ago, the Ames Bicycle Coalition proposed a bicycle path that would cross over those disputed properties.
When we were talking, you explained to me that there's three properties that are sort of adjacent.
Correct.
And maybe you just go, it's sort of, as you said, difficult to visualize without a map. But nevertheless, if you could just talk about those three properties just that everyone's got them clear in their minds.
Okay. So there's the largest one is, I believe, about 29 acres, which is on the corner of State Street and Mortensen, currently undeveloped.
And it always has been undeveloped.
It has been always undeveloped and is just east of the new middle school. There's currently sort of a recreational bike trail that goes through part of that property and then connects in with the Arboretum and cross-country course.
Right.
The middle part, what they call the middle parcel, is the actual site of the old middle school, where there was the parking lot in the building, which has now been torn down. And then the third property is the one that fronts on Lincoln Way and used to be the track and field, the old middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular property is the one that Breckenridge would continue to have ownership of and develop in one form or another. Again, this is all part of the settlement process. And the other two properties to be divided up between ISU and the City of Ames. And to maintain, hopefully, just natural environment on the larger property and some kind of single-family or affordable housing on the middle property. So as I was saying, about a year ago, we proposed a bike path through this property. A few reasons that we did that. One is it's actually has a really excellent straight-line path that we could get a bike trail from the new intermodal facility in Campustown, which currently does not have any bike lanes that lead to it, and then from the intermodal all the way out to almost all the way to South Dakota and West Ames in a straight shot. This would be a protected, buffered type of situation, more of a greenway, something you might see in like a Madison, Wisconsin, or a Minneapolis type of thing. So bicycles and pedestrians would be separated from the automobile traffic and have a very safe route to get across West Ames. Since that time, there's also been some new development on Dotson Road to extend the road into the back of the new middle school. So this trail would also give an excellent, safe route for children trying to get to the new middle school, which is somewhat difficult right now with the heavy traffic on Dakota and Mortensen and some of these other roads. So it's an excellent opportunity for this trail. And the reason we're excited about this settlement and buyback is it gives us a chance to really go back and negotiate and talk about right-of-ways and easements and the kinds of things that, you know, the kinds of land arrangements you would need to make in order to build a trail like this. And so it gives us a really good opportunity to go back and do that.
Okay.
So we're excited.
Yes, yes. And this was because the city bought back, just going over this again, bought back.
That is the proposal.
Oh,
so
it's
again,
planning.
This is what will occur on July 14th then, is the actual details and, you know, the fine points of what this settlement will involve, who will own what, who has right-of-ways and that type. But that's why we're very proactively now trying to get our, you know, our hopes and goals for this piece of property in front of city council, in front of the people that make these kinds of decisions, because it's an excellent chance to really do something good with this property that's been really kind of negative and a lot of controversy, as you said, and a lot of bad feelings. And I think we could turn it around 180 degrees and make it a real positive outcome.
Right, a positive outcome for everyone by the sound of things.
Correct. I think it would even benefit the types of residential that Breckenridge could potentially develop on this north parcel, it would benefit them. You know, if they could offer rental properties and tell students that we have a bike path that's right in our back parking lot that'll take you all the way to ISU campus, intermodal facility to catch a bus, that's a great win for them.
Right.
It's a great win for children trying to get to the middle school. It's a great win for people like me who try to bike from West Ames to East Ames to go to my job. And yeah, I just think it would be a great win for everybody.
Now, you mentioned Madison and Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. They are cities that have admirable bike routes.
Yes, and they're both cities that I've just been at recently. So as I go to some of these different cities and bike around, I really try to take note of the things that they're doing and how it works and how our infrastructure here in Ames could be improved.
Uh-huh.
And both of those cities have done a fantastic job and are really very bicycle friendly. And you do see a lot of people out on their bicycles in those towns.
So can you actually get across Minneapolis by bike without getting too close to traffic?
Yeah, you definitely can. They have a greenway that's similar to the type of thing we're proposing here on this property, only much longer. I don't know the exact distance. I believe it goes 8 to 10 miles, but it is possible to bike all the way from St. Paul all the way to the west side of Minneapolis in a very safe manner.
That would be very nice.
It would be great, and it's a start. Oh, Ames really just needs to get started. And I think this would be a great first project. There's a lot of potential there for it to hook up with some other trails that are in the area. I think we could develop a really nice kind of inner urban loop there that would be very similar to what you can do out of Ada Hayden, but it would be sort of here in the middle of the city.
Now, what exactly is an interurban loop?
Well, it would connect with other trail and allow you to actually do a circular path. So if you were interested in doing like a recreational type of bike ride, you could get on this and bike and then get on another bike path and do a complete circle without ever having to be out in the streets or crossing streets or having any interaction with vehicles. My kids just ran the Hope Run for Hospice on Saturday, which is a 5K run that starts at the new middle school, and they run on the streets and they have to close off streets, you know, to do this race. So it would give an opportunity to do those kinds of events without having to close off roads and have people running in streets. And it would just be a really great neighborhood thing. This proposed trail would also go through Franklin Park, which is a kind of underutilized park, in my opinion, just off of Franklin Street. It has some play structures and some things to do, but it's not a heavily used park, and I think this would help revitalize that park as well.
Now, that brings up another point there, that these trails can be used by pedestrians as well.
Correct. Yeah. The main difference with this type of trail design is that it is striped like a street, so it is a two-directional. You can think of it as like a miniature street. There is a yellow line down the center, which just kind of helps you to keep pedestrians and bicycles going in one particular direction on one side of the trail so that you're able to pass. That way you can safely have bikes going past pedestrians. The problem we have with a lot of the trails and names right now, which they call their shared use paths, is they're, first of all, not wide enough. Most of them are 6 to 8 feet wide, and they do not have that directional quality to them. And so you end up with, you know, you might have three bikes taking up the full width, or you might have somebody walking with their husband and walking their dogs, and they're taking up the full width, making it very difficult to pass. And it creates a lot of unsafe conditions.
Actually, I should maybe mention, I've got a Newfoundland dog, and I was walking along, this was many years ago now, walking along Mortensen on the sidewalk, and there was some bike event, and they came shooting by me. One of them went up on the bank, really, the rise, to get round me and my dog. Mm-hmm. And, well, there was an accident quite badly, and they called an ambulance, in fact. He didn't end up taking the ambulance because they had a support vehicle, and he'd been drinking, I think, actually. But they they bundled him in that and took him away.
Okay.
But
mistakes made there, it sounds like. But
That's a shared use problem, though.
That is an example of, in ideal conditions, it probably wasn't clear to the cyclist what's the best way to get around you and your dog. Really, these kinds of things can be engineered. You know, we can work with traffic engineers and traffic planners, and we can design trails and systems that these kinds of problems can be mitigated.
Or he wasn't wearing a helmet either, so that was a no.
Okay. Well, he's lucky then.
Yeah. Actually, a friend of mine had an accident on her bike the other day. I don't know the details yet, but I don't think she was knocked off her bike or anything, but I think she maybe hit a rock or something.
Right.
But it's much more frightening to have that kind of accident if there's traffic going by than if you're on a
And it happens more than you think. And I just want to reiterate that there are a lot of places, a lot of intersections, and a lot of situations where cyclists and cars and people walking just aren't sure what they're supposed to do, and it's not clear, you know, who has the right of way or who should cross first, or how do you go from a shared use trail and make a left turn when you have to cross traffic and you have to get to the other side of the street, which there's a shared use trail on the other side of the street. So there's just a lot of conditions that can make it unsafe just because people aren't sure what they're supposed to do. These are all problems that can be solved with engineering and making some investments in the infrastructure, right, getting the city council on board to actually allocate money to build these kinds of things. That's a great segue for me to mention that the other reason that we're very excited about the timing of this potential buyback is that we are currently involved with the city in what they call their long-term transportation plan. It's a five-year update. So it's a 25-year plan, but every 5 years they update it. And we've been working very closely with them to develop a lot of bicycle-related projects. And this particular trail that we're talking about today is one of the projects in that document that has been proposed. So it's in a draft state right now. And over the next few months, we will be continue to work with the city and the engineers that they have on that project to try to get some of these projects finalized.
Great.
So now is a very excellent time to be involved with bicycling activity in Ames. We're very active and we're very hopeful for the future.
Wonderful. And would you just like to remind people about the meetings? And you'd like the public to come and sort of...
Sure. So the most recent, or the upcoming one then, will be July 14th City Council meeting.
What time is that?
City Council meetings start at 6 p.m. now. They have moved up an hour earlier. There is a council meeting this tomorrow night, which we will be there to give a small presentation on this bike path idea. We will have some maps, and if you're interested in getting more detail on it, we will be there. They will not be discussing the settlement tomorrow night. However, we will probably take 5 minutes or so to discuss this. So then July 14th will be when the actual settlement will be discussed. And then if you go onto the City of Ames' website, you can find the links to the Metropolitan Planning Organization and this long-range transportation planning and all these other things I've mentioned. You can find Ames Bicycle Coalition on Facebook. As always, we post maps and details of our activities there. We also meet once a month now in the summer, and we'll probably go back to meeting like 2 times a month in the fall. So lots of opportunities to get involved.
Well, thank you very much.
That's a pleasure to be
Dan
here.
Dan De Geest.
Thank you.
That's it for Local Talk. We have been your hosts for today, Kepa Talk and Varad Devde. We have just been talking to Dan De Geest of the Ames Bicycle Coalition about an exciting possibility that will unfold at the City Council meeting July the 14th, a possibility for further bike trails in Ames. Earlier, we heard about Amnesty International and their local chapter meetings. Something I did not know before was that Iowa State had its own Amnesty International chapter. However, given the transient student population, it did not continue for a long time.
Other guests today have been Ron Edwards, supervisor of the Ames Animal Shelter, Josh Duchesne, artistic director of the Salon in Ames, who had the first inspiration to organize a Main Street Bike Night and was one of the main organizers, and Matt Metrical, general manager of Zylstra Harley-Davidson dealership in Ames.
Our theme song is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production, training workshop, as well as a radio show. If you would like to join us as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. You can find today's show on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, is able to post it. Thank you, Ron.
KHOI is now streaming live online at khoifm.org, where you can also find archives of KHOI's shows. Please remember that you, as a listener, are our most important part of Local Talk. Your participation as an audience and your generous donations help make it all possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.